This episode is brought to you by Pico Oysters, turning water into brine on Long Island's North Fork.
I'm Brian Kenny, and you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, HRN is celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, they've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
This is What Doesn't Kill You, Food Industry Insights. I'm your host, Katie Kiefer, and I'm in Madrid. And today I'm going to chat with Patricia Derrada from Compassion in World Farming and Alberto
Diez
from Handa.
Handa.
So what are those? First, let's organize. What are those organizations? What are you guys all about?
Okay, so thank you for being in Madrid.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my pleasure, darling. Believe me, it is entirely my pleasure.
Yes, and so as you said, my name is Patricia Derrada, and I'm the Spanish representative of Compassion in World Farming. Compassion is an international organization. Mm-hmm. We are working mainly for the farm animals. And we are fighting industrial farming for more than 50 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So despite in Spain we are really young because it's only 1 year and a half or something like this that we are working here. But internationally we are a little bit older.
Yes, absolutely. And Alberto, what is Handa? I've never heard of your organization.
And it's an animal welfare association. Uh-huh. So we are focusing on animal welfare. And I started its activities 30 years ago. It's now in September, it's going to be 30 years.
Wow.
And it's the field work has been focused on farm animals from the beginning, farm animals, lab animals, and wildlife in captivity versus zoos or circuses.
Yeah.
So from the very beginning, it was a bit of a strange association under the Spanish idea of an association, because at that time it was not so used to see animal welfare associations out of the dogs and cats and bullfighting and so on.
Right.
But from the very beginning, ANDA was out of these issues. And we created in Brussels in 1989 a Eurogroup for Animals. That is a kind of European platform in which now Compassion is two. At that time we were 4 or 5 European associations. Now we are near to 48
organizations devoted to animal welfare. Wow.
And the idea has always been from the very beginning trying to get in touch and trying to get in contact with industry, with authorities, trying to avoid the image or vegetarianism
yes.
and
vegetarianism. So you don't want to be associated like a pita.
Not being kept in that
right.
cage, in that box.
Yes.
And as a result, I do think that ANDA has a credibility between the industry and the and the ministries and so on, thanks to that.
Yes.
And in the other side, we have been completely involved in the development of alternative systems. So we are not against meat consumption by itself, but we are trying to have another kind of meat.
Yeah. Happy meat. Well, we have one organization in the United States that I really admire called the Nyman Ranch, and it's a consortium of about 800 family farms, and they all have to adhere to a set of protocols on how they raise the animals, and they are inspected by the Nyman Ranch, sort of supervisors to make sure that they're conforming to what those protocols are. And the animals are raised pretty much on pasture or in, bedded down in straw. It's mostly a pork industry, but they have beef and they're expanding. But they, You know, that to me is kind of the model, because it is industrial production, it's large scale production, but the animals are well treated and the farmers are well treated because they're guaranteed a price for their pork. So before we get too deep into what you guys are doing, let's talk a little bit, if you don't mind, just give us a thumbnail idea of what pork farming or meat farming in Spain looked like up until you started seeing the rise of industrialized production.
Well, so before, I think in Spain we had a more family industry.
Yeah, it was traditional.
Yeah, the traditional way of farming, and it was more around the country, not so concentrated.
So now it's being sort of.
Yeah.
Put into certain areas of Spain.
Yes.
And they're building big slaughterhouses or processing plants there.
I think so. Mm-hmm. For example, for the pork industry, it's mainly in the north. Catalonia is the mainly region with pork production. And it's like concentrated in different province.
The starting point was related to self-consumption.
Yes.
In a rural country. So when we were in the past a rural country in which everyone has a house in its town and they have a pig or two pigs or three pigs in their barn.
Right.
And they kill the pig for themselves, or they kill the pig in a small slaughterhouse, local slaughterhouse, a small slaughterhouse in a town, in a very small town. We were keeping the traditional means. What happens is that Spain changed, and we are not a rural country anymore. We don't have, the large majority of people don't have pigs in the jar, in the barn, in the towns.
Certainly haven't noticed any in Madrid.
So we have now urban citizens, and at the same time, the kind of the model of consumption changes. We were coming from a Mediterranean diet, and for that we don't need so much. Of course, in the Mediterranean, traditional Mediterranean diet, they are forced to be in meat needs to be there because it is there, and fish, and
selfish,
but not so much. And many times it's just birds, it's just poultry that people, as Patricia has said, could raise near the city in a small land, they could raise that. So that changed completely, and from that small consumption of meat, we enter another kind of model of consumption.
When did that start happening?
It started when it's the same that is happening now with the Muslim countries. Mm-hmm. When the middle class started to raise their average salary.
I see.
When you grow up economically speaking, and when you go, you need to demonstrate that you have this kind of new wealth, even if it is a middle wealth, but that you have it. The model changed a lot. I do think that mainly, or in some way, some publicity coming from the state and coming from the big business were starting to be there, forcing you to eat pork every day and to eat poultry every day and to eat beef every day. So at the end, that means that you need cheap meat, cheap eggs, cheap milk.
Cheap everything
in the city, in the supermarkets in the city. It's when everything changed, and especially when Spain enters the European Union, the borders were open, and we have this flood of meat products and milking products coming from the rest of countries that at that time they were already intensified.
Right. Germany,
France, Belgium, Holland, in the case of pig, clearly Denmark and Holland.
Yes.
So it was very difficult for the Spanish farmer to compete for prices in the system we were raising pigs. So it's when Catalonia the north of Catalonia, that they already have a tradition in doing chorizos mm-hmm. and this kind of sausages right, and so right. on. They already have the tradition based in traditional ways of breeding and raising animals, and they discovered and that if they wanted to be kept in the market, in that market that was focused on prices, they needed to change it. Mm-hmm. And Catalonia started. After Catalonia, probably Aragon
yes.
came. Murcia was the last one to mm-hmm. enter this system. Valencia and the east of Castilla y León, mainly yes. the part of Soria, Segovia, mm-hmm. Castilla-La Mancha to Albacete.
Mainly northeast.
Northeast of
yeah,
Spain.
Northeast.
Mm-hmm. There were some areas in the west of Spain near the border with Portugal,
yeah.
as they have this yeah. kind of special breed, the Iberian breed, that they if they want they fight a bit this tendency of quick intensification.
Uh-huh.
That doesn't mean that they have not been intensified, because they have been intensified, but not so clearly in this way of
yeah.
the Catalonian deed. Or,
where it's very concentrated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it one or two or three companies that are dominating this industrialized?
Yes, it's
in
not
Patria
so much.
In Patria is three.
Yeah.
In Patria
really?
They are three.
Many
in
three.
Pigs, many.
Many, many companies in
pigs,
pigs.
Many
in poultry it's three.
Poultry,
because
yes.
the business of the pork industry meat is huge.
It's huge.
It's one of the main industries of Spain.
So I read that you're now the third largest
the third,
producer
yeah.
of
yeah.
pork in is it in the EU or
in the EU? In the
yeah,
EU, the second one after Germany, of course.
Right.
Germany.
Well,
yeah.
Even more than Denmark.
Mm?
Even
yes.
more than Denmark.
Talking about numbers,
yeah.
yes. If we talk about number of pigs per citizen,
yeah.
So depending the statistic you are using, but
right.
the total number, and in some years, the number of pigs in Spain has been higher than Germany.
Yes,
wow.
This is what I wanted.
We
to
are
say.
Always fighting, if you
yes.
want, between Germany and Spain, depending the year.
But one thing that is important to notice about this is even in these years that Germany is higher production of,
mm-hmm.
of pigs, in Spain we have the highest number of caged animals.
Oh.
So the systems, the intensive systems
yeah.
used in Spain are always one of the highest in all Europe.
So let's talk about the system for a second, because so you guys in the United States were phasing out gestation crates, farrowing crates.
Yeah.
They still have the animals in, you know, barns,
but
right?
They are.
But this is being because of public opinion.
But the full time, because here they are prohibited to.
They're prohibited to have the
but,
animals like if they can't keep a farrowing
but when
pig
the,
in
when
a stall.
The female is giving birth,
mm-hmm.
still the animal is
she's
kept,
still in the gestation crate.
Because in Europe they are forbidden.
That's what I thought.
Yeah,
but the gestation crate
just
okay.
6 weeks before the farrow
yes,
the farrow
correct.
Is giving birth.
Yeah,
you can.
And after
the
birth,
and
too?
After the birth, you have
until the
animal is
weaned.
Wean,
yes.
And at what age do you wean? In the States, it's like 2 weeks.
No.
We
that
wean
depends
in
on the breed.
2 weeks.
5 weeks.
Wow. Still, I mean,
it's 2 weeks before
yeah.
and 5 weeks after.
It's mainly
yeah.
like half the year. For the sow is caged.
Yes, because she has she breathes three times in a cycle in a
yeah,
year.
Yeah.
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 India is just to avoid. I mean, you know that these animals they are multi-birth.
Yes.
They
yeah.
birth
10,
many,
15 piglets. Yes.
Because they are always naturally the rate of survival of each piglet is not very high. It's for that they are multi.
Yes.
Multi. Birth, multi.
Yeah, yeah, right. Big litters.
Big,
yeah.
Because 3-4 piglets always die naturally.
Yeah.
What happens is that, of course, the farmers they want to keep alive 100% of the piglets.
Yes.
Instead of saying, okay, we already have in our numbers that 20% of the piglets are going to be killed, aplastados.
They're going to be squished.
Squished by the mother. It's natural in their system. But they don't like it. So they want to go ahead with every single piglet.
Right.
And here we find the problem with the antibiotics too.
Oh yeah, let's talk about antibiotics.
Yeah.
So you have a very high, I was reading on, I don't know whose website, but a report on antibiotic use in Spain. You guys, I thought the World Health Organization and the EU Parliament had issued regulations for the entire EU about the use of antibiotics.
I do think that antibiotics use is going to have an end.
But you haven't gotten there yet.
We still have them.
But if we maintain this intensive system in the same way, it's impossible to get rid of antibiotics, because without antibiotics, animals die in these conditions.
Right.
But
if they look at the way the Danish or the Dutch farm pigs, they do an intensive system. Mm. But because of the probiotics, better feed,
more space,
slightly less
access to
concentration.
Anyway,
but they still have intensive. But they're not losing. They don't.
The densities in Europe are the same everywhere.
Yeah.
It's written down in the directive.
Right.
Number of pigs per square meter.
Yeah.
It is the same in.
Oh really?
In Denmark, than in Spain.
But it depends. There are some countries that improve the legislation.
But the densities in the current label is the same everywhere. Mm-hmm. Another thing is that Denmark could have 25% of their production in a special labeling scheme. Mm-hmm. The official one. In another labeling scheme.
Oh. A labeling scheme.
A label.
A different
concrete label.
A
different label that is
more welfare.
More an animal welfare label.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Right. An animal welfare.
So in that depends the success that these animal welfare labels, that is another issue to talk about, have in each country. What happens is that in Denmark, not so much, Holland too, in the case of pigs.
Yeah.
Holland, Denmark, in Germany, for example, they have animal welfare labels, very succeeded in milk and in beef, but not in pig.
But not in pork. Interesting.
Why? I don't know.
Why? Probably because the industry has lobbied the local government.
But in the case of Denmark and Holland, they do have this labeling scheme for animal welfare in pigs, and it works.
Yes.
It has succeeded. And for these labeling schemes, the densities are lower. But mainly because we need to keep in mind that in the case of Holland and Denmark, even if in Spain we have more pigs, we don't have the problem of land than they have.
Right.
They have a real problem in Denmark and Holland. They have a real problem with number of pigs per citizen.
Uh-huh.
That we don't have here, even if we have more total. Or because here at the end, if you go to Girona, you can have the same percentage of pigs per citizens than in Denmark or in Holland. But if you consider the full of Spain, of course, I don't know how many pigs we could have per citizen, but of course it's going to be much lower than the Dutch or the Danish. They have a real problem with
because they don't have as much space as you have.
We're talking about very small countries.
Yes, very small.
Very small countries, and you need to make to manage all the purine waste and everything. You need to manage it. Here the problem could be locally, focused in some town that has a big business. But in Holland, this problem is overspread all over the country.
So how have they managed to deal with their waste?
But it's for that they have convinced the population about this problem, and that is the reason for which these animal welfare labels succeed so much in these countries.
Because
the population is very aware of, even the government.
Because the government is pushing to
They are pushing, they know that they can't go ahead
They can't just let them squirt manure all over the countryside.
They already know it.
Yeah.
And they are aware of it. And the citizens are aware of it. And the governments are aware of it.
Right.
So they say, okay, we have these densities that are allowed under the directive. But it is better to create a better system or a better label, reducing densities in order to have a more sustainable...
Sure, a more sustainable system. So how do they manage their waste? Because, I mean, as I was describing to you before we started recording, like what happened in North Carolina with those manure lagoons.
They pay.
They pay? So the companies pay.
It's the same that we are doing with the pollution.
Do you guys put the big, like in the States, the better places will put like a rubber tarp over a lagoon and they introduce biodigesters into it and then those... eat up all of the microbia and all that stuff.
You have in Europe per country, you have the, you are allowed to manage some kind, some quantity of big waste.
Yeah.
And if you exceed it, you can, it's like the pollution with the climate change. If you exceeded it, you can buy the to another country, to Czech Republic, you can buy your right to manage the waste of your pigs.
Yeah.
And that's the way it's
dealt with. So you have what we would call carbon credits or pollution credits that you can buy, sell, or trade with other industries or with other people within that.
We did it in the past
industry.
With the milk too, with the milk water.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's the same system. And countries were buying and selling to each other.
Yeah, but the real fact is for the, you know, for the village involved in all this production is that this manure is mainly spread over the land.
Right, and that's how we do it too.
This is too much because
we have the same problem.
The soils are getting
They can't absorb it.
Yes, they can absorb it. It's too much, and the water is polluted by nitrates.
Yes.
This is a very real big problem because in Spain, despite the consumption of meat is decreasing in the last years, the production is growing up.
Right.
Because we are exporting so much. For example, to China.
I was going to ask you about that because I heard that there was recently that one Spanish company signed a huge contract with a Chinese company to import pigs.
And with the States too.
And the United States too?
Mm. With Fermín.
Fermín?
El de la alberca. Embutido. Fermín Sausages is the name. Huh. And they are doing ecological because we have asked them about castration and so on. Mm-hmm. So they are producing, this is the first ecological brand for the production of Iberian ham.
In the United States.
And they are exporting it to the United
and
States.
I see. So we are buying pigs pork from them. That's interesting.
Yeah, well
we sell a lot of pork.
But they are good, maybe. They are
good
the top
fans. So it's top of the line. Yeah.
The production to China is the, you know, the intensive one.
That's why I was asking you earlier about the genetics, because the Iberian pig could not really survive in intensive.
If the animal has a 100% of Iberian breed, take care about that.
Yeah.
Right. So that's what I was saying. Like the Chinese want to buy the Iberian pork, but Iberian pork can't survive intensive farming. So they're not getting 100% Iberian.
Yeah.
They're getting across
I'm
with
not
the
Dura. Sure
the big
in
one
China.
That is sending, I don't know to China, but to Russia, they are sending to Russia is Iglesias, is the one, the embutidos Iglesias, is the one that is sending to Russia. The main one, and they are coming from Salamanca. So we are talking about semi-intensive. We are talking about 2 months maximum in freedom.
Right, and what it takes.
The last 2 months,
grow
because
your pigs
if the animal is kept outdoors, just 2 months before it is slaughtered.
Yeah.
it is very difficult to make a distinction in flavor.
Really?
If it has been kept outside in the last term of its life.
Wow.
In the case of the Guijuelo, it's very clear.
But I think the flavor is mainly by the food.
Foraging. But
you can have intensive peaks and feed it with the same food. Yeah. So the flavor is
still there.
But the
quantity muscle is not moved as much.
One problem with that, what happens is that if the animal is not big, is not kept outside at least some small time before it is slaughtered, the relation between meat and fat changes.
That's right.
You can do a ham, but the presentation of it is not the same because it has more fat than meat when it has been kept. In
confinement. Jam.
It's the kind of infiltrated.
It's what we call marbling. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't that what we call marbling?
But do you think that a Russian consumer
can differ between
the percentage of fat in meat? Even many of the Spaniards, I doubt. that can make a difference between with it.
For me, the problem always is the way that animals are raised. You know, so despite of the quality of the product, that in fact, if you give to the animals a better life, you will have a better product. This is
I mean, they you know, that seems to have been pretty well established, actually.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's true with poultry, it's true with pigs, it's certainly true with cattle.
Yeah. So maybe it's a question of, you know,
and it is a question of breeds too.
Genetics.
In the case of poultry, you can raise poultry out of the cage following the campaign, but we are supporting the Humboldt breed and the Wilcons 400 breed.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a...
This episode is brought to you by Pico Oysters, turning water into brine on Long Island's North Fork. Grown out of Little Peconic Bay, Pico Oysters are the only oysters based out of New Suffolk, New York. Owner, farmer, and avid fisherman Peter Stein founded Pico Oysters in 2016 after leaving a corporate job in business consulting and educational software. It's his love and passion for the area and his farm that makes eating and learning about Picos so enjoyable. Taste one and see for yourself. Learn more at picooysters.com. That's P-E-E-K-O oysters.com.
Not a
bird.
That's
a plastic bird. Of course, that can be raised outdoors and in a low rate of growth.
Yeah.
Because in these cases, many times the breeds, they are here is where the multinationals and the came with the breeds. Is where they are.
Sure.
Because the genetic.
There are four big genetic companies in the world, right?
With low. Yeah. It's for that when we enter, when everyone in Eurogroup, when we have started, we are going to push for low growth.
Right.
Take care, because at the end, probably you are making the August, we call it, to the one of these genetic lines. Because if you don't push for it in parallel with other kind of requests, you are helping to
sustain
this plastic bird to go ahead, of course, with a low grow rate.
Right.
Of course. And out of the cage, of course.
Yeah.
But you are at the end taking out from an individual cage to put the plastic bird in a collective cage.
Yeah, that's what they are.
And at the end, if we want to talk about rural development, family systems, we are not helping doing it.
No.
So everything that, in my opinion, everything must be in the same mm-hmm. box. Animal welfare, traditional breeds.
Yeah.
And time, I don't mind if the, because what is low grow rate? 50 days, who has said that? 15 right. days, why? That right. depends on the breed.
Yeah.
Of course, this kind of plastic birds, if we call it low rate, they need 55 days.
Right.
But there are many Spanish breeds locally that they are without being growth very fast. They have 2 kilos in 35 days.
Why really?
Not? Why not?
Yeah, why not?
It's the natural growth of that right. animal. In Galicia,
right, so you haven't manipulated
or in Portugal them. Or in Galicia, they have local breeds
yeah.
that in 35, before 40 days,
mm-hmm.
they have already, because they are eating, we are talking in very humid parts of Spain mm-hmm. with a lot of greenery. In less than 40 days, they already have 2 kilos.
Wow.
Why are we to keep the animal until 55 kilos?
Sure.
So, it is true that we need to balance a bit in order to avoid at the end. How can we go? In order to avoid intensifying the nest, what it is called alternative,
yeah.
but at the end it's not that. It's another intensifying system that has been set up from some business that they know that people is more aware today about animal welfare, and so they create an intensive animal welfare system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so everything, in my opinion, everything must be considered in the same cage. And I do think that's the future.
Yeah.
Not animal welfare by itself, not animal welfare indicators by itself, but animal welfare indicators along with another kind of.
Well, along with, I mean, we haven't really talked much about the impact on rural communities. I mean, you were saying that if it's one small village and some company comes in and they bring in a place where they get more jobs and stuff like that, that's great, and that's great for that community. But it's having the same impact that it's had, I think, all over the world, which is that smaller farms are being swallowed.
And you are obliging yeah. to the production of the next town.
Right.
You are forcing them to disappear.
That's right. That's right. You're having an impact on towns surrounding that
of
area.
Of course, you don't have the impact in your town.
Yeah.
But in the other 100 towns nearby,
yeah.
you are forcing them to disappear.
Yeah.
yeah.
So small farms are disappearing, and the impact in the citizens' lives is really high because of smell, because
yes.
of pollution of water and soil.
Right.
And, you know, even sometimes this big industry, intensive industries are allocated really near to the village, to the
yeah.
first houses. So citizens are always fighting because they have to respect the minimum distance between
right.
farms and the village. And it's complicated, but it's not something that any family may want to have near the house, you know.
No kidding. I've been at a big farm.
Yes. Of course.
Now, so let's we should probably wrap it up pretty soon. So let's talk a little bit about the pushback. Like, who, you know, you guys have a pretty robust, it seems like a robust community of organizations like yours that are kind of pushing, you know, whether it's local community organizations or bigger organizations like yours that are coordinating to kind of shut this down. What are your tactics? I mean, how do you persuade a town, for example, to say, no, I don't think we want that in our town? Or how do you, for example, in your case, Alberto, where you work within the industry and you say, you know, you have to keep these things in consideration. How are you guys able to change the way the companies do business?
Up until now, and that could be can change in the future, we need to take into account that up until now, ANDA has been more or less alone with this approach.
Oh, wow.
Because the rest of the animal welfare people in Spain, either they were focused on bullfighting, dogs, cats, and so on, or they have this kind of vegetarian line.
Right.
So Landa has been living alone in the last 30 years with this approach, not alone, but with this approach, it has been the only one.
Right.
And now we have Compassion in Spain.
Right.
So what we have done up until now has been concrete agreements with the with part of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Agreements with part of the industry and agreements with retailers.
Retailers. Mm-hmm.
And agreements with consumers associations.
Uh-huh.
Is the way that we have been, the three ways we have been using up until now. In some lines, we are farther than there in the others.
Right.
So probably where we are more developed in this line is in with eggs.
With eggs.
Yes, mm-hmm. with eggs. That we have already a brand that is called Anda.
Mm-hmm.
So oh, cool. And we don't mind to put our logo in meat production.
Sure.
We also,
it's a label.
Yeah, and the label is called Anda, and it can be found in the Corte Inglés or whatever.
I'm going to be looking for it.
Yeah, in the Corte Inglés.
I ate eggs last night. They were
in
great.
In that case, what that means, as you know, animal welfare, thanks God, and I think that's good, is how it has been, it was not, but now it's a trend.
Yeah.
And now everyone is going to have animal welfare. And that is good.
Yeah, it's great.
But what happened is that not all the so-called animal welfare is animal welfare
mm-hmm.
in reality.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it is published as animal welfare label, that doesn't mean that you have a real animal welfare behind you.
Really?
And what happens for us is that has been a hindrance, because how to identify the real one and to separate it from this other current production, that not, because now the current production is animal or is claiming to have animal welfare, even the current production.
Mm-hmm.
Because it has not happened in the rest of Europe, but in Spain, as we didn't have an animal welfare labeling, because we didn't have, there has been a more or less, now we have more or less an official
mm-hmm.
animal welfare label that is managed by the Normalization Association, Spanish Association.
Mm-hmm. But a government entity.
Yeah, yeah. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's independent, but it's coming from the government.
Mm-hmm.
The government has set this private business, but it's lying to the government and lying to the public universities at the same time, veterinarians
mm-hmm.
or research institutes, but
yeah.
all of them are official, more or less, linked to official universities or linked to ministries.
Mm-hmm.
And to comply with this animal welfare labeling, it's so easy that everyone can do it. Not today, but I can think that probably in 5-6 years, everyone is going to have this labeling.
Because it's weak.
Yeah, this is because we have a really low level of animal welfare legislation.
Mm-hmm.
And not only at the national level in Spain, but it's an issue in all Europe. So we have to improve that legislation to
mm-hmm.
improve animal welfare in all the production. So
yeah.
It's not so easy to get the label of I'm a good business, I'm a good
mm-hmm.
producer, because I'm doing animal welfare. And in fact, animal welfare is having a laying hen in a cage for all the life.
Right. That's part of the animal welfare standard,
yes.
is that it's okay to
it's
have a
it's
cage
a standard,
layer. Right.
And you can have the animal welfare, or you can have the hen not in a cage,
mm-hmm.
just in the
indoors.
Ground,
yeah,
and you can open
a hole
in the wall to in Córdoba and Andalucía without any tree to a yard.
Yeah,
I invite you to go in August.
Yeah, right.
and they are labeled as free range eggs. Because of course the bird has a possibility to go out if he wants.
Right.
But so we have been in this kind of labeling, that not the official one, but when the labeling is coming in agreements between business and NGOs, is when it can work.
Uh-huh.
So in, you can put, because now you, it, as it is a private agreement, you can, in this agreement, you can introduce whatever you want.
Right.
And in this system, the yard must have trees.
Right.
The inspector, when giving the credit, the audit, must check that the jar is used every square meter for by every bird.
Right.
So that means that the jar
that they really are going outside. Yeah.
A reason to be there, not right. just to have my eggs under the number right. one or zero.
Right.
So we need, but this at the same time this. General animal welfare label, the official one, has been a problem with still the people that wants to do it differently and wants to do it because how to differentiate it in the market.
Yeah.
Because someone, the current one, at the end, the current one is appropriating the quality that should be where it is.
Right.
And they know that people like it and they appropriating the
I can't tell you how absolutely parallel this is to what's happened in the United States. I mean, it's.
I know that the
this
States
is such an eye opener for me because I thought that it was a much better, you know, better regulations, better government regulations over meat production here, but it's exactly the same.
Yeah, we copied your system.
Yes, you did. Everybody in the world.
We copied in all because now you have in the past. With you in the States, you were setting up some animal welfare legislation that you have stopped.
Like in California.
And you have changed now to private agreements.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what is happening in Europe. The European Commission and European Parliament, 4 years ago, they said clearly that we were not going to have any new legislation. That everything was going to be placed in civil dialogue groups, animal welfare platform, places where you can have private agreements.
Uh-huh.
But they don't want, and they say clearly, we are not going to set up new legislation, not today, not in the future.
Wow.
But we are going to create all the platforms, guides,
right.
Whatever
we're
that
create
is
propaganda,
yeah.
but we're not going
whatever
to
whatever that is
change.
Not binding, that is not legally
binding. Yes,
but it can help to have private schemes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's where we are now.
Yeah.
Well, I think that mainly the European Union are given a kind of freedom of to
yeah.
every country.
Yeah.
So I think it's a right and we have to do it like citizens, that we must push our governments to make better schemes of animal welfare
right.
in production,
right.
because this is the way. And so this is one of the reasons that now we are having this European Citizens Initiative in all Europe, that, well, Compassion initiated, but many organizations as ANDA and 145
mm-hmm.
other organizations in all Europe are joining to push the European Commission to show that the consumer and the citizens are asking for a better and a higher level of animal welfare. And we must move, in this case we are fighting for cages,
yeah.
we must move out of the use of cages in all industry.
Right.
So,
it's a
big task.
Okay, I have one last question. When you change your production from, you know, when we were talking about cheap meat, cheap eggs, cheap dairy, okay, so Americans are addicted to cheap food. What about here? Don't you have pushback from citizens who say, I like this really cheap food. I don't want to pay more for animal welfare because I don't care. Is that, because that is very prevalent in the United States.
In the United Kingdom, too.
Yeah.
Though we are not in that level. I mean, you know, when the, the, además, it, besides, it has been demonstrated that they are sociological studies saying so.
Yeah.
When the level of non-meat eaters, vegetarians, is near between 10 and 12% of the population, mm-hmm. as it happens in the States or in the United Kingdom, it is very difficult to go ahead. To grow 1%, it's near impossible. Why? Because what happens is what you are saying, because the people that is animal friendly is already there. And the rest of the population is completely, they don't mind. I mean, it's okay.
Well, they want their McDonald's. I want my McNuggets and I want
but
them
what
to
happened
be $1.49.
In the United Kingdom is, okay, once again, these people
right.
about
these
animals.
Stupid,
oh,
right,
they are
always
about the animal suffering. Oh my God, once again. So, once you have what's happening in Spain is we are not still in this situation. We could be, you know, and things.
We may improve.
We may improve, but now we are, in the last 10 years, we are in 5%. Mm. And the last study commissioned by Compassion about Fish, we were 5% of not meat eaters in 1999, and today we are still at 5%. Has been the same, it's stabilized. Mm-hmm. But that means that we have still
a way to walk.
Yeah,
so
you got a ways to go.
We are not in that position in which people, as United Kingdom can be, or Belgium, that people is even a bit fed up with animal welfare. My God, once again, these people is always.
Yeah, but
yeah.
This is why it's important, you know, the this approach to this big group of consumers, of meat eaters. Mm. And we want them, I think Anda too, we
yeah.
want them to say, okay, do you want to eat meat? It's okay, but let's eat less meat and better meat.
And better meat.
For me, that's the way. That's
yeah,
the way.
Me too.
Not
less
to increase the number of vegetarians because
no.
you are in 10% and what happens now?
Well, and then also, I mean, there are all the ancillary businesses that would have to disappear, and then there is the value of having animals out on pasture. I mean, there's a myriad reasons why animals need to be continued to be produced. It's just
that's our opinion too.
Yeah, it's just how you produce them is where you have to push the industry to do better. And the other thing that I love about your approach at Handa and also yours at Compassion is that you guys actually work with the industry. You're not just screaming about how horrible these companies are and how everybody is trying to make money and
yeah.
they don't care about anything. I don't think that's true, you know.
No. And I can say to you that Anda has credibility in its business. We have another problem with this hormona
and the
horses.
PMSG. Yeah.
And there are many associations in it, but the business that has been involved has called directly Anda because they didn't mind about the other ones. They
right.
know they are crazy people, but why are you there? And
right.
they were focused on Anda.
Right.
They wanted Anda out of it, and
yeah.
they didn't mind about the rest. But they wanted Anda out of it. So they have. I mean, they are not crazy people.
They're not crazy, and also, I mean, just
they know where
change,
they have.
They have to change their model as well because
yeah.
we can't have these intensive soy.
And they know they need support from NGOs.
Yes.
And they know where the NGO. With which
right.
you can talk is.
Right.
They know perfectly. We have now a big, big business of milk that I have not approached them. It has been them who has approached me, us. And
your group, yeah, yeah. Well, Patricia and Alberto, thank you so, so much for spending your time with me today. And we'll stay in touch. I'm here for a month. So, you know, there's
right.
always more to talk about. Like, I'd love to do a show about dairy. I did 8 episodes of my podcast about the dairy industry in the United States last
yeah.
year,
mm-hmm.
it's, which is collapsing right in front
yeah.
of us. So, plenty to talk about. Thank you so much for your help, and thanks
thank you.
For your work.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family and become a member. Thanks for listening.